I will tell you the kind of fast I want. Free the people you have put in prison unfairly and undo their chains. Free those to whom you are unfair and stop their hard labor.
Share your food with the hungry and bring poor homeless people into your own homes. When you see someone who has no clothes, give him yours and don't refuse to help your own relatives.
Then your light will shine like the dawn and your wounds will quickly heal. Your God will walk before you and the glory of the Lord will protect you from behind.
Then you will call out and the Lord will answer. You will call out and he will say,
"Here I am."
If you stop making trouble for others, if you stop using cruel words and pointing your finger at others,
if you feed those who are hungry and take care of the needs of those who are troubled, then your light will shine in the darkness and you will be bright like sunshine at noon.
The Lord will always lead you. He will satisfy your needs in dry lands and give strength to your bones. You will be like a garden that has much water. You will be like a spring that never runs dry. Isaiah 58, verses 6 through 11.
To take this commission seriously is to become part of what God is doing in the world. For healthcare workers, ministering to those in need is our particular response to God's initiation, renewal, and maintenance of this covenant with humankind.
In nursing, our response to God is manifested in the covenant to care for patients.
To care for all people.
We desire our professional approaches and our faith base to be congruent.
And we are reminded of the holy nature of this calling.
The holy nature of following Jesus in any direction we choose to go.
The nursing department at EMU attempts to follow our own sacred covenant that originated from this context of faith. It involves 9 approaches to caring for patients that help us to live out the way of Jesus in our nursing practice. Advocacy, agape love, and empowerment.
Grace, justice, and partnership.
Presence, reconciliation, and service.
The nursing concepts that we've chosen that they just read and highlighted are in this quilt. This was made by Nadine Bronk when she was a faculty member here at EMU, and it was a gift to Burl Brubaker, who was the chairperson of the department. I'm really pleased to introduce Nadine today. Nadine, we know her as a colleague and a graduate of EMU. She graduated in 1975. She's currently a board-certified nurse midwife with Virginia Women's Center office, that is in Hanover, Virginia, near Richmond. After Nadine completed her bachelor's degree, she worked as a nurse, but then she came to teach here, and she taught here at EMU in 1990 to 1996. And it was during that time that she went to Frontier School of Nurse Midwifery and Family Practice in Hyden, Kentucky. It was a trip to Haiti in 2000 that planted the seeds for Midwives for Haiti, and she actually began the organization in 2006. So please join me in welcoming Nadine.
It's very exciting to be here and to see former students and former colleagues in the nursing department. Glad to have friends and family from Richmond and my parents from Ohio and an uncle who graduated from here 60 years ago. Imagine that you are a Haitian woman and your name is Carmina and you live in Haiti about 1 hour from the border of the Dominican Republic and 2 hours from the nearest hospital. If you can remember how hot you were this summer and then think of no fan, no air conditioning, and no breeze. You are pregnant, and you've been in labor all day, and you're exhausted. You're in the dark in your small house made of sun-baked bricks, if you're lucky, with a tin roof. There is no cold water to drink. You are having the worst pain you ever had in your life, and there seems no way to end it. Something is wrong because you are bleeding more than you remember bleeding when you had your first baby. You're in so much pain, and you're getting very weak. Something is wrong because you can't scream anymore and you begin to slip in and out of consciousness. Your sister is sitting with you and telling you to try harder to stay awake. Your mother's begging your husband to do something, but he doesn't know what to do. They know you need help, but help is 2 hours away, and your family does not have a vehicle. The priest in the village has a truck, but no money to buy gas for it. As you start to bleed even more badly, in desperation, your family borrows enough money from neighbors to go buy the gas, take it to the priest, and once he filters it and puts it in his truck, he helps your family carry you into the back of the truck, which will carry you to the hospital in Inch. You continue to bleed badly. You are aware that sometime you are aware that the pain is continuing, that your baby is not moving anymore, and that you're soaking all the sheets and rags that your sister and mother brought along. 2 hours later, when you reach the hospital, you need blood and an emergency C-section, but there's no blood to give you. And the nurses ask your family to pay for the IV tubing so they can give you fluid. They also ask for more money to pay for the pain medication you need for the surgery. More money? You have a cousin in town named Anise, and your family runs to find her. She brings money and water, but when she arrives, she finds that it's too late. You lost too much blood, and you've died with a dead baby inside you. The next morning, your cousin Anise goes to her midwifery class down the road from the hospital, where she's learning about ways to save the lives of women in childbirth. She's crying, and she cannot stop. She tells the American midwife and the American doctor about you, her cousin, Carmina, how you died at the hospital at 5 a.m. this morning. The midwife and the doctor cry too, and the whole class is very quiet. The student midwives tell the Americans, it happens all the time at this hospital. Women arrive too late, in full seizures from severely high blood pressure, with sepsis from infections they got from use of dirty hands and instruments during their birth, in comas from labors that have gone on too many hours. They arrive losing too much blood too fast, from the anemia that was caused by worms, malaria, and poor nutrition, or all three. The class talks about what could have been done to save your life. They also wonder what will happen to your two-year-old, who has now been left without a mother. The death of Carmina happened in 2008, but it is still happening right now. While we sit here this morning, another 30 women will die somewhere in the world from totally preventable causes related to pregnancy and childbirth. Many of them will leave children whose chances of dying double when they leave their, are left motherless. In fact, the equivalent of 5 jumbo jets full of women die from complications of childbirth every day in this world, and yet the issue is rarely mentioned in the news. In places like Africa, in Africa like Nigeria, women's chances of dying in childbirth are as high as 1 in 7. In Haiti, it's 1 in 17. In the U.S., the chances are 1 in 4,800. We who believe that life is sacred should be the country leading the global campaign to save mothers in childbirth. But right now, the amount we Americans spend on maternal health is equivalent to less than 1/20th of 1% of our military budget. In the Luke 10 passage of the Good Samaritan that you are so familiar with, a lawyer asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" And I ask you, who is your neighbor? I suppose the answer to the question, who is our neighbor, sometimes depends on the roads that we travel. Dr. Ken Heatwell from my church had been going to Haiti several years, and in 2003 he invited me to go along to provide medical care for the women there in mobile clinics. I'm a nurse practitioner who cares for women every day in office in Richmond, but I'm also a certified nurse midwife, so when I went to Haiti, I especially noticed the pregnant women. I was appalled at the stories that the women told about losing their babies, their sisters, their daughters to complications of childbirth. There is a look they have in their eyes that tells of their grief, the same grief and pain you and I would feel if we lost a child, a sister, a friend. In Haiti, there are many beaten people by the side of the road, but the ones that I could assist were the pregnant women. Their need met my passion, making childbirth a safe and empowering experience for mothers. I came back to my comfortable home, but I could not forget the pleas I had heard from the women in Haiti or the look in their eyes. I started emailing midwives from all over the country to see if they would be interested in helping, and the response was overwhelming. A friend at church, Terry Glass, who is another graduate of this institution, assisted us in getting nonprofit status. An obstetrician at my workplace and Dr. Heatwall said they would be glad to serve on a board. So there was never any question about should we do this. It was just how. Jesus said that a good neighbor shows mercy. When I decided that pregnant women in Haiti were my neighbors and that teaching more women how to be skilled birth attendants was the calling that my whole life up to then, including my time here as a college, at this college as a student and as a nursing instructor, had prepared me to do, I found there were many other people along the road who were willing to assist me with being a good neighbor and showing mercy. Indeed, over the last 4 years, over 300 midwives from the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and Ireland have volunteered with Midwives for Haiti. Friends and co-workers and my board of directors raised money and picked up my spirits when the obstacles seemed overwhelming. Here in the U.S., midwives are guardians of the normal, and although we are also devoted to safety in childbirth, we value the fact that the experience of childbirth can bring a woman confidence and joy. But in Haiti, the focus is on survival and hoping that the mother and baby will live through the many complications that are brought on by poor nutrition, malaria, worms, early hypertension, lack of prenatal care, lack of transportation, and mostly lack of skilled birth attendants. The World Health Organization has determined that in developing countries, the difference between life and death for women and their babies is whether or not there is a skilled birth attendant present through their pregnancy and birth. A skilled birth attendant has the knowledge and equipment to give the woman the kind of care that prevents the complications in the first place, and then the ability to treat emergency situations in childbirth. She knows what to do if you're bleeding to death, if you're having seizures from high blood pressure, if you have an infection, if your baby is stuck or labor is taking too long. But in Haiti, over 70% of women have no access to skilled birth attendants during their pregnancy and birth. If they're in a rural area, it sometimes has to do with means to travel and the roads are bad. But even in cities, many women cannot afford to pay for the supplies and medications and hospital fees. Being a good neighbor in Haiti requires a lot of patience and persistence and compassion. The hospital where we train has no running water 70% of the time. Access to life-saving medications and life-saving surgery is always a struggle. There's no air conditioning in the classroom or where the women give birth. And out in the countryside where we go to deliver prenatal care, we work under tarps set up between trees and are grateful for the rice and beans the Catholic brothers feed us when we arrive back at the orphanage. You know, it's a time-consuming and expensive task to care for one's neighbor. One of the main delusions of middle-class Americans is that eliminating poverty is too expensive. It just will reward the lazy and the criminal while producing no benefits to the upright citizens. Tom Keegan found in Were You Born on the Wrong Continent that that is not true. It costs a lot more to avoid the poor. In America, it costs, we need more police, more prisons, more home security systems, more suburbs further out, more private schools, more fear and anxiety, and more hardening of the heart. Caring for the poor and the beaten down is the least costly thing to do. And that's true in Haiti, too, because the cost of not caring for women in Haiti who are dying of childbirth is more orphanages. There are many nonprofit organizations in Haiti running orphanages. One day, when we were in Port-au-Prince and stopped for lunch at a small restaurant, we met a woman named Connie Anderson, who's she's a Baptist missionary in Haiti for over 30 years. 4 years ago, she took in an infant whose mother had died in childbirth and was starving to death. That baby survived, and the word got out that Connie could revive starving babies. So in the last 4 years, she's been brought many babies whose mothers have just died, sometimes the fathers and uncles walking days to bring the infants to her. She hired a Haitian woman to help her. 16 of them have remained in her home, and she was in Port-au-Prince gathering food and supplies to take back to them in her home in the mountains south of town. She learned about what we were doing and pleaded with us to never give up. My children would have mothers if they had had skilled care during their pregnancy and childbirth. Today, this morning in Haiti, two Midwives for Haiti graduates, Magdala and Thela Mock, who each have four children themselves, are in Dopele or Rosec or Marmande or one of the 12 villages we have chosen, delivering care to the pregnant women there. The pregnant women will receive vitamins and iron and worm medicine. They will get mosquito nets and anti-malarials. They will get their blood pressure taken, and they hear their baby's heartbeat. If they're too swollen, have proteinuria, are developing high blood pressures, they will get taken back the long, rutted dirt road back to Inch and the hospital in the back of Ronell's 1974 red pickup. If you visit St. Therese in Inch, you will find Anise and other midwives who are working hard to care for women in childbirth with skill and compassion. If you arrive with seizures, they will start your IV, give you medication for your blood pressure, and try to save you and your baby. If you lose your baby, they will not allow it to be carried out in the bucket to be buried as they used to do. They wrap it in a towel and put it in a cardboard box and treat it with respect. They'll hold your hand when you are in pain. At the beginning of each morning, the next new class of midwives will stand to sing a hymn and say a prayer to begin the day. They thank God for the opportunity for a free education, for teachers who are both American and Haitian, and for the Americans who have made it possible for them to learn how to save the lives of their neighbors and cousins and sisters. They're proud to have the skills that give them a job the rest of their lives. They know what it means to receive mercy, and they, in turn, will give mercy to hundreds of women in their lifetime. You never know which road you will be on when you see someone or some group of people that needs mercy. Remember that your calling will be found along your road when you see a need of the world that meets your joy and your passion. What you love doing will eventually match a need, and you will find your deepest joy in giving mercy. I end with the story of Simone. One evening last summer, she was in labor at the hospital, and it was time for supper back at the orphanage, and the students and teachers were getting tired and hungry. I had one student who was willing to stay if I would stay with her to deliver Simone's baby. The rest took the truck and left with promises to check on me in a couple hours. Generator had been turned on, but with the sun going down and the lights very dim, it began to feel a little lonely and scary. The labor was not going fast, and Simone, although she'd had a baby before, I was not certain this was going easy. We walked with her, we sat some, we rested her on the terrible excuse for a labor bed. I think Simone must have noticed I was worried with my constant suggestions for changing positions and listening to the baby for my own reassurance that all was well. Finally, I laid my head beside her from sheer exhaustion. She said something to me in Creole, and Maud, the translator, said, "She says it will be okay, Nadine. The baby will come out." Then Simone started singing a hymn. Maud and the student joined in. The tune was vaguely familiar to me, so I hummed along. I began to wonder, who is the midwife here, as I'm the one who seems to need reassuring. And Simone did have a healthy baby within an hour. It happens every time I go to Haiti. They reassure me that this is good, that this work is important, that things will be okay, that God sent us to them, and that they will pray for us every day. I do not completely understand why some of my happiest moments have been in the back of a pickup truck in Haiti, with children running alongside and friends holding on tight for the inevitable bumping. I just know that for me, I am sometimes not certain who has received the most mercy, the women we serve or those who go to serve.
I know without a doubt I have found deep joy. Thank you.